Hey, this is Rick Bucher, and you're listening to the BJ and Bucher podcast on The Cycle. What a day for us to start the podcast with the news that Derrick Rose, homeborn, developed, all Chicago Bull, is now a member of the New York Knicks. BJ obviously is his agent, and I'm going to start right here. How the bleep did this happen?
Well, you know, it's kind of funny. You know, I was looking forward to starting off our show, and all of a sudden we were talking about topics and things earlier in the day, as you know, and suddenly we have a very interesting topic that we can cover right now.
You act as if you weren't even party to this. Like,
well, I mean, you know, it was
hey,
very,
guess
it,
what
it,
happened?
It was. It's kind of one of those things, you know, kind of interrupted my lunch, to be honest with you, but...
What were you having?
A little salad. You know, I was enjoying my dad's in town with the draft. And, you know, I was just kind of hanging out. And all of a sudden, I get a call from the Knicks. I was like, why are the Knicks? They don't even have a draft pick.
Right.
And then they spring this on me. So here we are. But
so seriously, you were not, because, and this is part of the beauty of this podcast, is going to be BJ as a player, as an executive, now as an agent, is capable of taking us behind the scenes on everything that happens. And the general feeling is these rumors have been out there for a while. It's Justin Holiday for Jerry and Grant. They threw in Derrick Rose and Robin Lopez and a second round pick. But ultimately, it's Derrick and Justin going to the Knicks and Jerry and Grant, Jose Calderon, a future second round pick, and Robin Lopez going back the other way. So there have been rumors out there for a while that either Jimmy Butler or Derrick were going to be moved. They were going to break that up. And the assumption is the agent and Derrick have something to do with ultimately what happens. But you're telling us you got to find out shortly before the rest of us did.
Well, yes. That's a yes and no. You know, I was very aware that there was a possibility that he could be moved. There was some talk about it. And as an agent, wherever there's smoke, you know, there could be a fire. Mm-hmm. So we were very aware. I didn't think they would actually do something. The reason I didn't think so was, you know, it puts them in a very difficult situation. When I say them, talking about the Bulls, puts them in a situation where clearly now they were a team that felt just a year ago that they could really contend for a championship. Mm-hmm. They were a team that really put a lot of emphasis on winning and winning now. Mm-hmm. And suddenly when you begin to talk about moving Derrick Rose or Jimmy Butler, it puts you sort of in a, as we like to say it now, we never say the word rebuild, you're retooling.
I didn't think that they were actually, they would start this process now, but clearly they have. And they're going to go in a different direction where, you know, they're going to get some younger players there. They're going to get some players and really begin to look and do some things as they look towards the future.
Well, but that's what I don't get about this deal. Like when I heard the terms of the deal and I heard Robin Lopez, I'm like, okay, Jerry and Grant, okay, Jose Calderon, okay. And who else? This is Jerry and Grant. Is he going to be the MVP, who obviously has 1 year left on his deal and injury history of late? But if there was ever a time for the Knicks to take a shot at something like this, where you could potentially get a number three pick for, I like Robin Lopez, but he's a center who... Everybody's going small now. Everybody's playing athletic. Like, what game are you playing? Jerry and Grant? Jose Calderon? He's a nice placeholder for your point guard position. At least give me a future first-round pick that I can sell to my fans that, well, this isn't the whole deal. If we're bad, then this will be a good pick, or somehow, some way. They didn't get anything. Not anything of substance to me.
When you look at it, the big thing is you're getting an MVP caliber player in Derrick. And suddenly you're looking what you get back in return. In the way that the game is being played today, you're saying, okay, what's really going on here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Robin is a client, and you're exactly right. You know, now the game is being played by smaller players, especially at the center position. And if you're going to talk about winning and winning now, you got to look up how you're playing and the type of player that you're bringing in. So that's an interesting trade as far as the center position. Then you have the two guards, and you're looking at it going, clearly they're not on the same level as a Steph Curry or Russell Westbrook or Damian Lillard or Kyrie Irving. So, okay, so what exactly are we doing here? And the only thing that I could look at and point at is they're retooling what they're trying to do. They're rebuilding what they're trying to do. And now I wouldn't have to agree with it. I know where you're going to go with this. But as I look at it and when I first heard about it, I was like, okay, I see what the Knicks are doing.
Yes. Derrick Rose with floor spacers like Porzingis and Carmelo Anthony? Are you kidding me?
Yeah, this is an enormous opportunity, an incredible opportunity for the Knicks, for Derrick, for all the players there. And I know how special basketball and what kind of sports town this is here in New York. I just think it's an incredible opportunity for him and looking forward to it.
All right. So the thing about this podcast is going to be the real.
Yes.
Okay. So when I first heard this deal, my first thought was there's a dark side to BJ Armstrong. He's got that wholesome, sweet face. He's always saying the right thing. He's dressed the right way. I'm thinking BJ basically went to the Bulls and said, look, this team sucks. And we're not signing up for this. Derek is back, and we want to play. We want to contend. And we see guys going out the door, and we don't see you making any moves, and the fit with Jimmy doesn't quite fit. There's problems in the locker room. We're not going to be here, so you guys might as well make a move now. I assume that had to be the driving force behind this, that you guys had to be the driving force behind this, because otherwise, I don't get it.
Well, I have deep conversations with a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, especially with Derek is 27 years of age. And this isn't some young kid who's just learning his way around the league. And let's just look at one another and say, realistically, where are we at as a team? Where mm-hmm. are we at as a group? Where is he at in his career? And when you look at the roster, the way the roster is built currently, mm-hmm. I don't think it's a championship caliber team, mm-hmm. especially in the way the game is being played today.
I agree.
Was it a thing where you come in and you demand a trade? No, but I think it was, we had to be very honest with each other to where we were really at.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And look at each other and say, you know what? Where are we really going? What are we really trying to accomplish short term? Mm-hmm. But more importantly, you know, veteran players, in particular in this situation with Derek, you're ready to win and you're ready to win now.
Yeah.
And if that is not the case, then let's look at all the scenarios and do the best thing for everyone involved, okay? And that was a conversation that needed to take place. You have to be honest with yourself. You have to be honest with your team, and you had to look at it. Did I ever think that it would happen this way? No, I really didn't. Hmm. But what I am very excited about is that the ownership group gave Derek an incredible opportunity.
Yeah.
They gave him an incredible opportunity. And
so is this almost like a parting gift? You did well by us,
yes.
Or whatever anybody else might say on the outside.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I will say this. And as I get more into the, you know, doing this and we begin to talk, you know, Jerry Reinsdorf has been incredible with me over the years. And this right here was just one of those things where you look at it and you go, wow, here's an incredible opportunity to continue to do what you've always had an opportunity to pursue, which is a championship in a great market, on a great team. And every day you're going to have a chance to pursue that. And look at yourself and say, you know what? We got a chance. Because it's really hard to do that when you know in the back of your mind that
you don't have enough. Yeah.
Okay. And he has a chance to do it in New York City.
Yeah.
So for that, We're very grateful for this chance. And it's always shocking no matter what when you first hear it and when I first got the call.
Well, and grateful for the chance, but as I said from the top, Derek's from Chicago.
Yes.
Derek wanted to take on I'm going to bring a championship back.
Yes.
I'm going to follow in Michael Jordan's footsteps.
Right.
Now he doesn't get that. And so he does get the opportunity to play for championships, but he doesn't get to do it in Chicago. And he's had his hometown team trade him. Now, you guys may have understood the circumstances, and that may make it easier. But still, like, you're playing in New York now. You're wearing different colors than the ones you grew up with.
You know, emotionally, there's an emotional attachment. You know, as an ex-player, you know, I grew up in Chicago. I played in Chicago. There will always be that attachment there in Chicago. Derek grew up there. He's from there. His family's from there. That will always be there. Without question, he wanted to bring that and do that there in Chicago. Without question. But the business,
yeah,
you grow up and you begin to learn what this business is really all about. It's business. It's never personal. It's business. And as much as he wanted to do that, as much as he gave everything that he had to bring that there, the reality is it did not happen for him.
Yeah.
And you have to understand what this business is all about. And that's what has happened. The Bulls had to do what was best for the Bulls. And now the players had to do what's best for the players. And that's the business side that us fans really have to look at, because this is a business. You know, it's like a gray area in there between being a fan, but understanding that in the end, everyone is doing what they need to do for themselves, sure, and for their organization.
I can't help but look at that. This is really a close circle that got this done. Phil Jackson in New York, you, the Bulls. I mean, there's a lot of familiarity here among the people that are making
this.
Decisions.
I can say this. A lot of people had a lot of history in that room.
Well, and I'm just wondering how much of that contributed to this happening. Like, you knowing Phil, both the good and the bad, knowing everything about Phil knowing you. There's the big elephant in the room is, if you get Derrick Rose league MVP, then this is like, then it really doesn't make any sense. But there is a question. What can he be? He's shown glimpses, mm-hmm, hasn't played a full season, right? Mm-hmm. Like, where is he? What are they getting? And if I didn't know you, or I didn't know the people I was talking to and could trust their opinion, I might have to think, for as little as they gave up, I'd have to think twice about exactly what am I getting.
Well, I think the first thing they're getting is a terrific teammate.
Well, back that, but before you get there, just the Phil Jackson, your relationship with Phil, and how much that played into this getting done.
I think they played a lot into getting it done, and from this perspective. There's much said about the triangle offense. There's much said about how it takes years to understand it.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot been said about, what type of player can function in the triangle. And I just happened to have seen the triangle when it first came into existence with, at the NBA level, at a championship level. You know, Tex Winter, obviously the architect of it, that was running it, quite some years before. But I saw the evolution of the triangle. And from the resistance of how Michael Jordan and all the players resisted it to, mm-hmm, suddenly they embraced it, and suddenly now it's this 11 championships later, now it's kind of like, what is the triangle? We're still trying to find out what is the triangle.
Actually, you know what? It's come full circle.
Yeah.
It was the thing nobody wanted to play. Then it became the thing that won championships. And now it's become the thing that nobody wants to play again.
All right. So I think that there was a comfort with Phil knowing that I know exactly what that triangle is.
Right.
And if anyone can help the transition to the triangle, outside of the locker room and their immediate coaching staff, without trying to be a coach myself, that I can help.
So,
in that department.
Should I translate this? You can convince Derrick Rose that the triangle is not going to kill him?
Well, it's not about convincing. You know, the thing about the triangle, you have to understand, and we can talk about this as long as you want. It's not about the offense. The triangle is not the offense. The triangle is an offensive scheme, if you will,
mm-hmm,
that allows you to be the best defensive team that you can be, because it allows you to get the defensive balance that you need. So if you watch a Phil Jackson team,
mm-hmm,
okay, all of his teams did the same exact thing. They defended.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, why did they defend? Because the triangle gave you the proper balance. They were a rebounding team because defensively the players were always in position where they should be to rebound the ball once they played good defense. And the triangle made you and forced you to recognize the other four guys on the court that you're playing with and put them in position where they could always receive a pass.
Okay.
Okay, so you defend, you rebound, and you pass the ball. That's what the triangle does. Now, the triangle doesn't work if you don't defend. The thing that is going to allow this to be whatever this great triangle thing is,
right,
is first, we have to defend.
Right.
We have to rebound. We have to share the ball. Now, when you have those three ingredients. Yeah. Now you begin to place players that work in different areas of the court. Mm-hmm. So you have all of these different players working in different areas of the game. That's going to put a tremendous amount of pressure on the other team because they can play fast. They can play fast. They can play half court. They can play in transition. They can play two-man basketball. Mm-hmm. They should be able to play a three-on-three type down screen, use whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about it because now all the elements of the triangle is going to come into play.
So you can do all the things and give it the versatility that now that you saw with a Jordan and a Pippen. Now, I'm not saying that those guys are Jordan, but it allows you the opportunity to move pieces around on the board
right. And
attack. So Melo, for the first time, will be playing against single coverage.
Right.
He's going to be a different player.
Right.
Porzingis is going to be a different player because now what are you going to do with Derrick Rose when he comes off the screen? Mm-hmm. Derrick is going to be a different player because
he's going to have space.
Yeah. I'm really excited to see how the fundamentals of basketball will come into place because that's all the triangle is. It's fundamentals. Mm. And I know that Phil and the coaching staff there are going to emphasize only one thing, the fundamentals of the game. That's never going to change.
Glad you mentioned the coaching staff because I felt like I was on an island. I thought Jeff Hornacek was a nice pick. I like Jeff Hornacek, what he knows, his experience as a player. I like what he did in Phoenix. I think the reason Phoenix came apart was not his fault. Those were personnel decisions. But what do you think as far as when you put together the mix of Derek, New York, Melo, and Hornacek coming in and being the head coach? I know you generally wonder just how much of an impact first, head coaches have. But that said, what do you impact do you think?
First, Jeff Hornacek, Jeff Hornacek. I've been knowing Jeff since college, right? So, for 30 years, I've competed against Jeff. I've been knowing him, and I've watched him. I played against him. I've watched him coach. So I think his familiarity with the pro game is going to be excellent. Now, the thing that I'm most excited about him is that he played with superstars. Mm-hmm. He played with John Stockton, and he played with Karl Malone. Mm-hmm. Now, everyone can't coach a superstar.
Deal with the ego part of dealing with a star. That A+. Right? He will be able to deal with that well. Okay, this is about managing people. This isn't about just going to the board and just drawing up X's and O's. This is about dealing with people.
It's probably more that. It's probably more
absolutely
dealing with people than
so
it is the X's and O's.
I have no problem with that. Jeff understands what it means to be a star in this league. Mm-hmm. Jeff understands all of the things that goes wrong in this league. So I'm perfectly comfortable with that. The next part of the equation is
it's very hard to get people to say, you know what? It's time for me to win. Mm-hmm. It's not time for you to become an all-star. It's not time for you to average 25 points a game. It's not time for you to worry about your next contract. It's time for you to win. Okay. That's what I think is going to be difficult. That's difficult for any coach. That's difficult for any team. Now, with the expectations of this team, I think it changes drastically because the expectations here are going to be very high. And how quickly can they get to a team that say, you know what, we are trying to win. Mm-hmm. So I think that's going to be the big test for, you know, Jeff and his staff is managing the expectations of the players saying, you know what, it's going to take some time for us to figure out how to put all this together. All I need you guys to do is to focus on winning games because we're going to win our fair share of games because we're going to play hard and do all the things. But I think that's going to be the most difficult task.
So it does take time. But Derek is on 1 year left on his deal. So that's the next question. Is this sort of let's see where this goes? This is a free look-see for both Derek and for the Knicks and to see whether it's a fit. Or do you go into this looking at it and saying, New York, great market, Porzingis, young star, Carmelo, probably the best offensive player Derek has played with in his career. Let's get going, get rolling. Staying here is an afterthought. It's a matter of let's see what we can make this.
Well, this all happens, you know.
Without giving away all your leverage.
Well, no, I'm not giving away anything. The big thing, you know, as an agent, you know, you want to sit back and think that you have these master plans and all these things.
You don't?
You really don't.
You know, it's not a, like a beautiful mind. Your garage has like all the yarn and the pictures and all that. Because BJ, knowing you the way I do, I often think that that's what your garage. Yeah. I've been to your house. I haven't been in the garage. Sure. I've often suspected that whether it's the garage or it's some room, there's some place you go that there's some crazy stuff on the walls.
There is.
Okay, right? Good.
There are a lot of crazy things, but.
When we simulcast this, we'll do it from that room.
But the reality of it is, the truth of the matter is, the leverage is the performance of the player, and that only happens on the court. Okay. It doesn't matter if he is 1 year or 5 years on the court. Players have to perform when it's time to perform. That is your leverage. All the things that we're talking about, me being a great agent, will only happen because of one thing.
Right. Whether he plays or not.
Derrick Rose and all the contract, and I don't care what he has, nothing will happen without one thing, performance. And that's what I understood then when I came into this league. That's what I understand now. The X factor to everything I do, the X factor to everything that I encourage every player is perform. That's the X factor in life. So all of these other great schemes and plans sounds good, sounds great. We love to think we're smarter than the next guy.
Yeah.
When your guy performs, Derrick Rose, when he comes out and he has 25 and 8 and 6 rebounds and you win, everybody's the great. The GM is the best GM in the league. The coach made the right play at the right time. The agent has this mad science in his garage.
We just know you have that. Yeah. I don't know how it connects to anything else. Right?
You know, the Wasserman group is like, you know, the marketing plan is better. Everything, everyone gets better.
And the logo is fantastic. Is
incredible.
Yes.
You know, his smile is brighter.
Right. So,
but that's it.
What other pieces? Now you look at Porzingis, Melo, and Derek, and I look at that as the nucleus. What, as you knowing championship teams as you do, knowing those respective talents, what do you need to put around them? What ideally?
Well, I think the ideal thing now is you touched on it earlier. We touched on it earlier in the broadcast. Defense. You know, the game has really changed with the 3-point shot. So it's put a premium on rim protectors. Okay, and guys who can switch screen roles and all those things. The 3-point shot is here to stay, people. It is definitely a part of the game that I don't see is going to change anytime soon. So when you have a 5-man, I'm looking for fives now who can actually switch, like a Tristan Thompson, like a Bismack Biyombo. Draymond Green has clearly redefined now how we look at the center position. I mean, this guy is playing the center position now at a level where he's having an effect on the
game. He was almost first team all NBA, son.
Exactly. So now I'm looking for them, or the Knicks, to shore up defensively how they're going to play. Are they going to funnel and just say, we got a shot blocker back there? How are we going to guard screen roll? Every team's going to do that. Yep. How are we going to guard the three point line? That's a part of the game. And the next, and probably even more important than guarding the 3-point line, is depth. Clearly, you have to have depth if you're going to go far into the playoffs, right? You can have a big three, a big two, whatever, but you need 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. You got to have those guys because all those guys are going to be needed as you make this run. I mean, you're talking about making a deep run, you need depth. And you saw that this year. I mean, I saw Dante Jones on the floor. I was like, wow. And he gave them significant minutes.
Right.
And then you saw all the other players that came off the Cleveland bench.
Yep.
And you saw Sean Livingston and these guys come off the Warriors bench. So depth is an important part. So I'm really interested now to see what they're going to do at the center position because most teams are going to exploit the big center who can't defend it and they take advantage of it. And then the depth of the team, that you're able to put pieces who can make a contribution to what it is you're doing so that you can contribute and play as a team. You're not just relying on these three guys to just score 70% of the points every single night. You need significant contributions for people if you're going to make a deep run at this.
I'm going to use that as the pivot point because I did want to touch on the fact that you also represent Draymond Green, and he was at the heart of a lot of stuff that happened in these NBA finals. And I just wonder, first of all, the narrative coming out of the finals now is Draymond is a dirty player. Draymond cost them the series. By his own admission, he's saying, yeah, you know what? I need to change. I put it on me. You've been through this pressure cooker. You've had that happen.
Yep.
What do you advise Draymond Green in how to handle this and what to do?
I handle it in one way. First of all, let's maintain our focus on what we do. We focus on winning. That's it. There's nothing else going on out there on that court that really needs to get you distracted. Everything you do because of winning. That's it. All right? It gets to the bottom line. I don't want to hear all the background noise. Let's just get to what we're doing, winning. Mm-hmm. I encourage Draymond to be Draymond 100% of the time, because Draymond has a very unique quality about him that you don't see often. He has the ability to reflect. He's a very self-correcting individual, and I love that about him. Hmm. I love the fact that after the game, he has the ability to reflect and look at himself and say, you know what? I'm going to hold myself accountable and responsible. That's leadership. Okay, that's not something that you make up. That's not something that you can fake it. Draymond Green, as you know, and I have it's like an excellent opportunity to work with a young man who is self-reflecting. Mm-hmm. And he holds himself accountable. He didn't blame player X. He didn't blame the NBA. Yep. He didn't blame the referees. Draymond said, this is on me. That's what excellence does. It places responsibility. So with Draymond, I never want him to change. And that's the hard part. But it's finding that balance in there. Okay? And if there's anything that I share with Draymond, and I shared this with him when we first met.
Right.
And I told him this, because I've been watching him since he was been at Michigan State, and I've been knowing him a long time. I said, don't let what you do well, don't let what you don't do well get in the way of what you do well. Don't let your emotions get in the way of the other 99 things that you're incredible at. Okay? But do it when you're ready to do that, because everybody is evolving, and I watched him evolve this year. That game he had in game 7.
Yeah. It was incredible. Incredible.
Okay.
Everyone's making a big deal about LeBron James.
No, that was okay.
Draymond Green might have been the best player in that game. You could make a case he was right there with the guy that everybody wants to say is now a top five player all time.
Okay, what he did. I don't know what the numbers were, but the fact that he did what was necessary to have an opportunity to win that game.
Absolutely.
Okay, I wasn't impressed with the stats. I was impressed with he did what he needed to do.
Time and place.
He made the right play at the right time in the biggest moment.
Agreed.
So when I see players that do that, I go, wow. Because now it's only one thing on his mind. And when you see people make winning plays, mm-hmm. that's not something that you see often.
This is what concerns. There's two things that concern me. First of all, the one thing I didn't – when did he become Bruce Lee? Like, I never noticed, but you've probably seen the video out there, like him kicking his leg out 104 times. They even had him in game 7. They found one where he got one at the end where he nearly got Kyrie. And I just never noticed. But now it's become a thing. And you got to be honest with me. I mean, look, he got Steven Adams good, and you can say he was off balance. He went up, whatever. LeBron stepping over him, you know, whether he got him or not, that's a reaction. You say, be yourself. And remove the parts that get in the way of doing what you do well. You go, dude, do you. Be you. And in all seriousness, that is part of the, like, it's part of who he is.
I think it's a yes and no. It's a loaded question, right?
Damn right.
It's a loaded question.
I mean, is your just on the ledger of things that you keep and the things that you throw away, what do you tell him as far as, you know what, you can keep the high kick. Just not the high kick towards certain places. Or do you say...
Well, yeah, okay, this is what I want to say.
What do you tell him?
Look, okay.
There's no way possible that you can play, get fouled, and suddenly, I'll get fouled, and then I'm going to kick someone. Right. Like, the mind doesn't work that fast. Like, right. I would...
But a second later, it might. Like,
well, you might be thinking it.
there's no way possible that I can figure out a way to hit you unless I just really there's no way
unless you're already thinking about it, like,
yeah, there's no way, right? Right. There's just no way possible.
Can't happen, right?
But it is, you know, like when these things happen, you know, it's easy to just make that call. We're all sitting there, we're watching the game, but there's no way possible during a basketball game that he gets fouled and say, in the second quarter at this specific time, this is what's going to happen. There's just no way possible.
So there's nothing to correct. Is that what you're saying?
There's nothing to correct.
There's nothing to correct.
You know, and he does,
the leg goes a lot of places though, man. I mean,
you know what's funny?
And high. Like, I never realized he was that.
No.
He's that limber.
I want you to go back and
look. I want to do a yoga class with him. Like, can he do the crane or whatever it is? Like that.
There's photos of
you do yoga, right?
Yeah, I do yoga.
Can you get your leg up that high? He's like 6'7", wait, 6'8"?
At my age, probably not now.
Could you ever get your leg up like that?
Probably at one time.
Okay.
Probably at one time.
All right. It's phenomenal.
But no, you were around when Dennis Rodman was playing. That guy kicked his leg up on every rebound.
Yes. Well, no, you know what? And here's the truth. To be perfectly honest, you look through the course of the game, like Kyrie Irving on the game-winning shot.
Yeah.
What does he do with his leg? He kicks his leg out. Like, guys do it all the time. It's the same with the screens that they were saying Golden State was moving. Yeah. Like, watch a game. Watch the finals. Tristan Thompson was bear-hugging guys by at the end.
Right.
Don't point one thing out. It's I'm not joking. It's the height that he gets. He reminds me of like one of those dipping birds, you know, like in the glass where it dips closer.
I'm not out there measuring.
It goes all the way back up.
You're measuring. I'm not out there measuring, but I get what you're saying. Okay. I get what you're saying.
Right. It's anyway, it's an extreme. All right.
Impressive.
So
it's impressive.
It is impressive.
All right.
The other thing that I'm curious about is the Warriors ownership is now saying we're going to be very aggressive and changing things up. We're going to go get a Kevin Durant. We're going to go get somebody. We're going to Dirk Nowitzki. We hear all these names floating around. And I look at the special chemistry of that team. I look what they accomplished this year. I look at 73-9, and you were basically 1 minute away from repeating as champions. Now suddenly, because you lost, because Kyrie Irving hit a shot and Steph Curry couldn't, because Andre Iguodala's layup didn't get the glass before LeBron James blocked it, he didn't know. He couldn't have known, right?
Right.
Like, little things happened, but now they're left wanting and we need to change this up. And I just look at it valuing the special chemistry that team has, and I'm thinking, don't overreact. The last time I saw you overreact like this, you were ready to trade Klay Thompson for Kevin Love. So you know championship teams. Like, well, when you hear about all this, we're going to go get KD and we're going to do all this, and you got clients involved, you look at Draymond Green, how do you feel about this idea of being that aggressive?
Again, I'm going to put it into context. Just like when you hear players get an interview immediately after the game.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Heat of the moment.
It's in the heat of the moment, right? I'm sure he was at a space where there's frustration, there's the adrenaline going, there's all these things that's going through. And here.
Okay. Yes.
Now, give him some time in the summer where he can reflect, see what's going on. All right, you didn't win the championship. Okay. That was an amazing season. You did something no one in the history of the NBA has ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You've had game 7 in your building, and the game was basically a tie game with a minute to go.
Mm-hmm.
They could have easily come down and made that shot.
Yep.
Kyrie could have missed the shot.
Yep.
LeBron could have not made that block or could have gotten called as a goal, whatever. So what you learn in this league is that winning is very, very difficult. And you cherish the moments that you have an opportunity to win. You cherish every opportunity, but you also have to respect how hard it is to win in this league. Right? We all want to win.
Mm-hmm.
All the players want to win. All the owners want to be aggressive. But that's a special group. That's a high character group. And they like playing with each other. Now, you don't just win 73 games. You don't win. You don't go to the finals back to back if something is not there.
Right.
Now, if I had to really put into context of what he meant is, we're going to give ourselves a chance to add another player that we think can fit into our
group of guys that we have.
Right.
I don't like how aggressive can you really be?
Yeah.
With this group, because you just did something no one has ever done.
Right.
You won 73 games this year.
Right.
That counts for something.
Right.
Okay. And we know how hard it is, and we just saw a phenomenal 7 games. We saw phenomenal individual performances. We saw something that, you know, frankly, I don't think we've ever seen, right? They were down 3-1 and come back. So we saw incredible performances by incredible athletes. I'm not going to discredit that because I've been on both sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
But you were there. You had a chance.
Yeah.
And if you have a chance, what else are you looking for in this league? You gave yourself a chance. If you would have told me the game is tied with a minute to go in game 7, I like my chances.
Yeah.
And what more can you ask for?
And I'm going to ask that to of our listeners. What more could you ask for from a first podcast than to have it right on the eve of a blockbuster deal and to hear from the man who didn't orchestrate it by any means, basically heard about it the same way we did. Maybe not exactly. Maybe not exactly. My only one disappointment as we wrap this first inaugural BJ and Bucher podcast is that I didn't, like, I've heard the crazy BJ. My family has heard the crazy BJ through my phone from another room, and I didn't get you there. So that's my goal. That's my...
We're going to get there.
Okay.
We're going to get there.
All right.
You know, we're going to get there. That's all I can say is we keep listening. You keep listening. And you and I are going to get in here, and we're going to suddenly realize, did we really say that?
Yeah.
Did we really go there?
That's what I'm looking for.
You know, because we talk about, you know, so many different things. So this is great. You know, I'm really looking forward to this, and this is going to be a lot of fun. And I hope the listeners have as much fun as we're going to have as we go forward with this podcast.
I know it's going to be therapeutic for me. I think it's going to be therapeutic for you, and I just hope that it's therapeutic for as some of the other people in the room nod their heads.
I know.
Yes,
everyone's like, yes. This guy has so much built up; he needs to get this out. I just hope we can get there where we can really talk about trades and all of the things, because I think this gives us an enormous opportunity to cut through all of the rumors.
Yes.
And get right to it, right? And get right to how trades actually happen. Get right to how players actually get drafted. Just get right to it instead of going through the, you know, all those things that you hear about. And that's what I want to do for the listeners. It's just, you know what? Just get right to it. I'm going to lay it all out there and just tell it how it is.
There you go. There you have it. Couldn't have said it better. Stay tuned for the next episode of BJ and Bucher.